You know, so the wheel has been invented someplace. It's just a matter of sharing that information. And I think just to get the vendors thinking about labeling things is good. And then in the future, more and more things can get labeled in innovative ways. And ultimately, the vending machine companies can design more accessible machines if instructed that there's a demand for it and a need for it.
Yes, I did. I also, when I was at the Symposium for Improvement of Services for the Blind, I talked with the chairman of the vending organization of the National Federation of the Blind, and he said that these are issues that are being raised all over the country, and people are working on ways of dealing with it. So that is happening. It's just a matter, like you said, of keeping it on the forefront here in the Commission for the Blind so that the people who come into the program know that that is an expectation and that it is part of the training and part of what people expect to do. And I think that that is, I think that's happening now.
Excuse me, why couldn't they just use a tape similar to what they use on canned goods with Braille on it? And it'd have to be sticky so it would stick to the glass, I guess. But it could be done that way, couldn't it?
It depends on what kind of marking you're trying to do. Some of the
Braille.
Where exactly, you know, when you're talking about putting it on the glass, yes, that would work. If you're talking about putting something, even a very small something, on some of the buttons that are on some of these machines, it really would not stay there. It'd have to be really, really small, and they're rounded on the inside, kind of shaped like your the inversion of your finger,
right,
when you punch the button. And so
I say put it on the glass, and if they put a different item in there, we'll just use a different piece of tape for that location.
Yeah, there are things being worked out, and we'll keep encouraging people. Switching on to a different subject, there are a lot of things that have been going on. I sent you a message yesterday to let you know that we have all been confirmed as commission board members. I mean, now that we've been at it for a little while.
Barbara, may I ask, what did they send you a letter? Did they?
No, I called them.
Oh, okay. They did not actually notify any
no.
of you.
No.
Okay. They didn't notify us either.
They said that if we had been called, then that would have been when we would have known that we weren't confirmed.
Didn't know if I should come to the meeting this morning.
As with most things in the world, if you really want to know, you need to ask instead of waiting for somebody to get around to it, I guess. I did go to the confirmation hearing on the 9th of February. It was a very interesting day to go anywhere. And as I mentioned in one of the emails that I sent to you, I appreciate the fact that all of you did contact your senator to be represented since you weren't able to be there. They did ask me a couple of questions about the budget and the differences between being a commission and not being a commission. And so I answered those questions, and otherwise they accepted what we brought to them and confirmed us. I mentioned a little bit ago the Millennium Symposium. That was in January, the 17th through the 19th, and Carlos and Pearl and I went to that, and there were a lot of things discussed. Some of them have to do with how we can remain in touch with other agencies for the blind, what kinds of initiatives we can take. There are a lot of things that go on that are trying to, as we well know, have us be in big umbrellas and that kind of thing. And so it's important that we stay in touch and try to make sure that we do the best we can to not have those kinds of things happen. And toward that end, I have done a lot of visiting senators concerning the bill 788 that was is trying to put the Commission for the Blind back in the Health and Human Services system. On the 4th of January, Pearl and I talked to Senator Werbein, who is chairman of the Appropriations Committee, to explain to him what had happened with the budget and what kinds of things needed to happen from our perspective. On the 29th of January, Carlos and I met with Senator Thompson, who was the person who crafted this bill, and she said to us that she would not withdraw it, even if we got the budget down to zero, the deficit request, that she had come up with the bill because there was a deficit request, and she didn't really like commissions ever to begin with, and so that was part of why she did it too. On the 2nd of February, Dave Hunt and Carlos and I met with Senators Jansen and Coardson about the bill LB 443, which has to do with the vending program, changing the tax code. And then on the 5th of February, Dave Hunt and I met with Senator Redfield about the vending program bill. And on the 6th, we met with Senator Wickersham, who was is the chairman of the Revenue Committee. And we knew that he was really pretty much going to be against it, but we wanted to at least talk to him so that, you know, he wouldn't be thinking that we were talking to only committee members and not to the chairman. And on the 12th, Carlos and I met with Senator Cunningham concerning both of those bills. On the 7th of February is when the hearing was on 443, and to the best of my knowledge, they have not yet voted on it either way. The other bills that they were dealing with that day, they have killed already. So I guess we can say that we are better off than the supporters of those bills. But we still don't know for sure what they're going to do on that one. Then on the 22nd was the hearing on 788, and there were seven of us who testified against that bill. There were 30 people who raised their hands saying they were in opposition. There wasn't a soul who was in favor of it except for Senator Thompson herself. Former Senator Crosby came back and did a good job of letting Senator Thompson know her opinion of what she had done. So that was a good thing. And then yesterday was the hearing on the Commission budget, and Pearl and Bill Brown and I went to that. Pearl and Bill both testified. I didn't. I think that they did a very good job, and you know, I think that we, if all goes well, may see that bill killed. Senator Jensen said that next Wednesday would be the next executive session, and he didn't say absolutely we're going to kill it, but I know that that's what he hopes is going to happen, and I hope that we were able to help the senators to understand that that really would be the thing to do. There are other things that we need to be about, and they have to do with policies and the plan and all the things that are ongoing parts of what's happening within the commission. I hope that we can maybe get this bill thing over with next week, and then we can really concentrate more fully on the other kinds of things that we need to do. I appreciate everybody's effort in dealing with these bills. One of the things that I especially appreciate is that during all of this process, nobody, not consumers or staff or anyone, has been saying, boy, I sure wish we hadn't done this. In fact, morale has been good. It's been excellent. And people really are investing in what we started. And we knew when we did this, that it was not the thing that most states were doing. And we are going to constantly be needing to make sure that the kinds of services that are provided here and the kinds of attitudes we show and those kinds of things are going to cause people to want to be supportive of us and to want to contribute to what we're doing. There was an article in the Journal Star on Monday that talked about the bill and about the fact that we are just getting started and we need to be allowed to get our feet on the ground and that kind of thing. Nancy Hicks did that article, and she really does a pretty good job, especially considering how complicated the issue can get. So far, to the best of my knowledge, there hasn't been any kind of rebuttal of that or anything from the editorial staff like happened last year. So that, I think, is a good sign, too. Someone had mentioned to me yesterday that one of the things that she thought was good was that there were senators who seemed to know us by name. And I said, they don't seem to, they do. We have been there a lot. And it is really paying off. There are a lot of senators now who really do, I think, have a better understanding of what it is that we're doing and what we're wanting to do and what we intend to do. So with that, I think we will move along, unless anybody on the board has questions.
Possibly, isn't there later in the agenda a thing on legislation?
Yes.
Maybe we could, I mean, you've kind of covered it quite a bit. Maybe we could just do that now. And since we're speaking, you've spent a lot of time talking about the legislative issues. And who is going to present the legislative portion of the agenda?
Well, I think probably, I was going to talk about that, but if we have covered it, is there anything else that we need to talk about the legislation?
I would add something.
Okay.
You covered most of it really thoroughly, but I do want folks to know there were other meetings. For example, the governor did meet with Dave Hunt, Carlos Servan, and myself about 443.
Yeah, I figured you were going to talk about that in the director's report, but that's okay.
Well, it's one of the meetings. There were many, many meetings, and as Barbara's report gave you an idea of that, but I felt really good that he did grant us that audience, so to speak, because he certainly doesn't sit down with everybody that brings a bill to the body.
No kidding.
So that was good, and a lot of individual people made contacts, wrote letters, and I really value that. I think that the work done by everybody was just really tremendous.
Yes.
On both of the bills, both of the 788 and 443.
At the 788 hearing, were there a lot of questions from the senators?
Not really.
No, there were a few, and it depended on the. Several senators asked LaVon Crosby to say hello to their nephew or.
Yeah.
That was kind of interesting. One of the people presenting was Jerry Dyksterhuis, who is the director of Career Designs, which operates the WorkNet program, which is a employment or a placement program for people with disabilities. He had sent me a very strong, powerful letter of support of opposing the of support of the commission, basically. And so I visited with him, and he said that he would also testify. He did a really good job testifying, and then one of the senators asked him what the main barrier to employment for blind people was. And he spoke very well about its
attitude,
fear that employers have about blindness.
Yep.
He did a good job.
Yes, he did. Now, there were seven people who testified. I was the leadoff person, I guess you could say, and then former Senator Crosby and Steve Spiker and Jerry Dyksterhuis and Pearl and Mike Floyd and Amy Eidenmiller. So it was a well-rounded set of testimony, I think, and Amy talked about the fact that when we became a commission, that services were able to be delivered more quickly, and that it was easier to know who was in charge of what and that kind of thing. And that was, I think that was excellent. So I really think, and one of the things the senators appreciate about the way that we generally do things is that we do make sure ahead of time, as much as we possibly can, that we're not repeating what someone else is saying and that we are brief. Those are two things that they really appreciate. And it's not too late to write letters or make phone calls to them and let them know that, you know, these bills are around and we want them to pass one and kill the other. Yes. Yes.
I would like to talk in my capacity of president of the National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska. Members of the National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska have been contacting senators, drafting letters. We went to talk to them, and it's interesting to see that they have a file on letters and phone calls. And they took a look at those letters and phone calls and basically say, well, we got all of them in support of the commission and against 788. So I encourage all of you to contact the members of the HHS committee, even though you already did, and to tell them to support or to be against 788. We know that it's crucial to do it. We know that maybe they're going to kill it, but don't claim victory until it's killed. So let's fight until the end.
Carlos, do you know, and you know, you said the file letters, when emails are sent, do they print those off?
Oh, yeah, they do. We went there, and one of the senators, it was Senator Cunningham, and said, okay, let me see, I got some letters here. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, one from Bob Burns, one from Gary Doddy. Oh, yeah, Carlos Herrera. Oh, one from all of them, blind people, sending letters, one from Peralta. We put together a nice letter with the help of Michael Floyd, Barbara Walker, and I, and set all the points so senators can read the articulation of what really makes sense, and that really helps them.
Senator Thompson actually sent an email thanking us for our outlining of our position.
Yeah, she was.
So she did, she read it. She
was polite.
You know, she was polite. Wrong, but polite. Not wrong about our outline thing, but about her position.
And we were polite to her, too.
Oh, absolutely.
She was wrong, and we were polite to her.
I'd like to read the names of the people on the Health and Human Services Committee. Senator Jim Jensen is the chair, and then the members are Byers, Cunningham, Erdman, Maxwell, Price, and Suttle. And those are the main people that need to be contacted. If it can get killed in committee, then we can be done with it and get some real work done.
Can you do that again?
Oh, sure. Jensen is the chair, and the members are Byers, Cunningham, Erdman, Maxwell, sorry, I'm going to that, Price, and Suttle.
Maxwell, Erdman, and Cunningham are all new.
Right. And Cunningham basically told us that he will support us in different words, but Erdman and Maxwell didn't, and they are the ones who need to be invited and send them letters. Jensen already told us that he will support us. Saddle told us that if we don't request, she will support us. Price is usually against us, so but you need to target all of them. Even when Senator Jensen is in favor of us, thank him for his leadership. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I might, this may be helpful for folks, but you know, Senator Thompson was challenging us on a matter of keeping our word about the funding that we said we wouldn't ask additional funds. And one of the things that we kind of alluded to somewhat in the hearing and so forth, but didn't really come right out and say, you know, how well has, you know, HHS been over a 5-year period at keeping its word about much of it? And I think if you look at the record, it's pretty clear, and there, nobody's really making a big issue out of it. But they haven't really done much about, you know, saving money or anything. They've wasted money and they've spent more than expected.
Well, one reason that we haven't really made an issue of that is that our goal is to keep the commission alive, and what HHSS does is its business, because one kind of discussion we don't want to have, and senators wonder about it once in a while, is, okay, if you don't want to be in that one, what about being in this other thing?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, people a long time ago kept trying to put us in the under the voc rehab in the Department of Education. We don't want that either. We want to be separate, and what the rest of those entities do is their business. Whether it's good or bad, we can deal with it in another context, but not necessarily with respect to how we deal with bills that want to put the commission somewhere else, anywhere else. Is there anything else on legislation? Okay.
In regards to LV 443, that Senator Rice is sponsoring, he did a great job, but also they are putting some kind of a cap. And that's a consensus among senators, so they can have more support. And the cap, I believe, is $120,000.
$200,000.
$200,000. Yeah. That's my name.
And that's per year, though.
Per year. Yeah.
Yes.
There was discussion of having it only last for 2 or 3 years or something like that.
Yes, another sunset discussion.
Right. And so this actually, I think, is a very good compromise that will, I think it will be more likely to pass with that, that you know, and yet it'll still be a good amount of funds that can help improve the program. Mm-hmm.
We had a question at our Omaha chapter meeting that the way that the 443 is written, that it's there's no, you know, how the money is to be spent wasn't really addressed in the legislation itself, that it would just be kind of given to the commission. That is how would the actual transfer of the money go? I mean, how would it be distributed within? Would it all be through the commission to the vending, or to the vending direct, or?
Well, remember that the vending program, Nebraska Business Enterprises, is a part of the commission,
right?
And the director of the BE is a commission staff person. So the funds would come directly to the commission. The primary use would be for building the business enterprise program, facilities, new vending sites, better training for managers, better training for our staff, more staff. There was a time when we had half the number of vending sites and three or four staff people. Now we have two and double the sites, so it's really we're not doing very well with providing what the vendors need, and that's because we just, you know, really need to enhance that program. But then it didn't limit the funds to be just spent for business enterprise, and, you know, it would be used for vocational rehabilitation. And, of course, a lot of the new vendors are clients of the Voc Rehab program, so it would go to help people get the technology they need or whatever they need for their goal, their employment goals.
Yeah, each of the senators has to have a statement of intent for the legislation, and the statement of intent for that one is the purpose of this bill is to help reduce the 70% unemployment rate of blind or visually impaired persons in Nebraska. LB 443 would earmark the sales and use taxes paid by blind vendors and transfer these funds to the Nebraska Commission for the Blind and Visually Impaired. The commission would use these funds to expand the current blind vendors program by purchasing more vending machines, acquiring more vending sites, training additional vendors, and funding other services necessary to support the vendors in their jobs. Last fiscal year, the total sales tax paid in under this program to the Department of Revenue was about $120,000. The investment of this money into the Blind Vendors Program would not only save the state of Nebraska money in benefits it currently pays to unemployed and underemployed blind people, but it could bring an additional income tax revenue from vendors who are gainfully employed. Most importantly, it presents an opportunity for the success and independence of blind individuals. The bill also includes a provision allowing the Department of Revenue to deduct from the sufficient revenue from the first year's receipts to implement this bill. This provision will limit the fiscal impact of the state's administrative costs. So that's the way the legislature, the introducer, sees the bill.
Now, currently, it's my understanding that there's a set-aside so that the money that the vendors raise, some of it is plowed back into the program, and that's dedicated money.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be different so that it wouldn't be dedicated to vending. It would be, could be used for, I suppose, any kind of job, vocational-related purpose for blind people. Is there any kind of, say it happened. And then you get all of a sudden $120,000 came. It's, is there a, how this money is specifically going to be spent? What portion of it to be vending specific or, because it seemed like the vendors or the senators had some questions in one of the emails that I got. I think they had some questions as to how this money specifically would be used. Is there a plan as to, if this thing passed, as to how it would be implemented?
Well, for most specifically, it would go to, there's some new sites that we're committed to and going to be starting up that are really good vending opportunities that we'll need to be filling with machines and equipment. And I would really like to hire another person for that program. And also, other vendors looking at other sites. For example, the state office building here in Omaha. The current vendor's contract is just about up, and we had to an opportunity to bid on this site here. But with the current budget, there's no way we can afford to do it. And so we're going to have to let this one go, perhaps another year till the lease is up again, and then hopefully be able to take that opportunity. So there have been, this is just one example, opportunities for vending situations, which mean a job for a blind person, that we've had to let go by the wayside because we simply didn't have the funds to put in it. So, that's the plan. The first thing is get the new ones in place, get a staff person, and then see where it goes from there. I guess I don't know how it would work exactly, whether we'd wait a whole year and get an amount, whether they would funnel money monthly, or Carlos, have you heard any discussion of how that would work?
No, but I would like to add also that we have a committee, meaning Terry Fatoche and I, and talking about training for future blind vendors. And I will say this money is going to be even short just for the vending program because there are so many things to be invested on, including training. We are talking about 6 to 9 months of training at the center, and that can cover that as well. For the next 5 years, we have been already identifying new sites in different areas, and we are short of money there. So after 5 years or throughout the years, I think we will be able to predict ourselves better if we are going to have extra money or not. And if we do, which I doubt it, I'm sure we're going to find ways to spend that with your advice.
And then this funding impacts the federal funding also.
Yes, this can be used for match.
And from my understanding, there is last year it was, there was $120,000 that was received as part of, by the state, as part of this tax thing, so that $200,000 cap is actually...
We have some room to grow. Yes. Yeah.
But wasn't there a number in like 97, 98,000? Seemed like I've gotten two sales tax figures.
Right. That smaller number was before all of the reports were in, I believe.
Okay, so that was a preliminary number.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. And it does vary by year. It goes up and down even when you have new sites. But then if you have, like, there's been quite a bit of buildings where they were renovating or changing, and so the vendor basically had no income during that time, or, you know, minimal if people were moved, as people were moved to the other courthouse and this and that, impacts that. So the amount of sales tax that they pay in will vary too.
Another consideration is most states, when the vendor pays set aside, much of that money goes also, well, not much, but some of that money goes to their own retirement,
yes,
and vacation time, things like that that vendors in Nebraska don't have now. So that will improve their lives as well.
They do have a retirement plan that's paid by the set aside. They don't have health insurance here in Nebraska.
Health insurance, yeah.
Okay, is there anything else on that? Okay, Pearl.
Okay. Some of the topics that I want to report on are also mentioned elsewhere in the agenda, but I'll try to hit the things that are not specified first, and then we can move on into the things that are on the in, at least in old business, and maybe in both, if that's all right. Is that acceptable?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good.
Okay. Just first, some kind of basic things about some meetings. The State Rehabilitation Council was supposed to have met February 10th, and we had major storm that weekend, so we had to cancel. I have to say the amount of work that goes into setting up a meeting and then making the changes to cancel and set up a new one is huge, so that's taken a lot of Jan's time. We are set for Saturday, March 3rd. We're going to do a teleconference, and we will have, the video conference, which we will have sites at Omaha, Lincoln, North Platte, Scotts Bluff, Norfolk for part of the time. Did I say them all?
Kearney.
And Kearney, thank you. So that people can go to their closest location and participate in the Rehabilitation Council meeting as well as a public forum the same day. And what we're going to do, the council will meet from 9 to 11:30 in all of the sites except Norfolk. And then all of the sites will continue with a video conference that will be a public forum from 11:30 to 1. So the reason we're doing a public forum in conjunction with this is that the state plan is due April 1st. It always used to be July 1, but with the Workforce Investment Act, we have to follow what Department of Labor when they submit theirs. So it is now April 1st. So we need to have public forums prior to the submitting the plan, and I'll talk more about the plan later, but with all this other these other distractions like 788, you know, there just has not been a time to do public forums prior to this. So we're going to do the statewide one public forum, and definitely we can accept written comments, email, phone calls, anything that if anyone can't get to the forum. So we encourage people statewide to contact us. So that's March 3rd. Later in March, we're having a state staff meeting, March 20th through the 22nd, and we'll be addressing two primary topics. One is informed choice, and then the other is services to older blind persons. And that has kind of a two-prong approach. That is the peer support of older blind people, and then the other part is employment, you know, how we can really provide more effective services to older people in both the vocational rehabilitation and the independent living track. So it should be a very good meeting. We're looking forward to that. That'll be in Lincoln.
Could you clarify what informed choice?
Yes. That's a part of the Rehabilitation Act amendments that has become increasingly strong over the years. The idea is that clients need to not just be, first of all, they need to be active participants in their plan. That is the development, the entire process of being a client is something that really demands and, you know, allows full participation from that person. Informed choice is a concept that consumers really have pushed and educated the federal government about, that clients need to be informed of what choices are available. They have to it's the informed choice, which is a true understanding, not just maybe a list of what do you want to do, or I just got a message from Nancy Floral, called. Her street is still very icy and she will not be able to make it today. So, you know, it kind of used to be, and in some states I think it still is, particularly with blindness, the person comes in and the counselor says, well, what do you want to do? And they say, gosh, I don't think I can do anything. And they say, okay, here's a talking books, you know, that's kind of it. And then the next step is really helping the person understand what they can do, helping them learn what they can do, but then still not really informing them of the wide range of possibilities, both for education, for employment goals, for training, technology, all of that sort of thing. So over the years, it's been an increasing emphasis on informed choice, that is the responsibility of the agency or the commission to actively provide that at every stage of the game to all of the consumers.
Pearl?
Yes.
I just wanted to add the state staff meeting, that the training will be two counselors on how to best educate about informed choice and how to implement that.
Thank you. And we also, when we do our staff meetings, I guess we have a part of it that the support staff are separate, but we include all of our staff, the rehab counselors, the rehab teachers, the support staff, the administration, because we all need to learn how to inform the people that we work with. You know, we all need to know all these different things. So we have various topics at our state staff meetings and also at district meetings, which they hold. But we do include all of the staff at those meetings. Let's see. If you have questions at any point, please jump in. Okay, and then Barbara already mentioned the Millennium Symposium on Improving Services for the Blind. It was in Baltimore in January, and I just want to comment that it really was an excellent opportunity. We were specifically invited to go, and there were, 10 states represented, do you think, or? 17 states. So, you know, it was kind of a select group, and we really had a lot of good information and good sharing. So that was a great opportunity. The regional or a meeting of center directors was mentioned in the previous minutes. I did want to mention that we do have that set up. We received approval from the RCEP, the Regional Continuing Education Program, to fund that training. It will be in Lincoln at our center, basically, in the building next door to our center, June 20th through the 22nd. So it is scheduled, and Fatosha's working on planning it in her spare time. But that'll be yet another good opportunity to showcase what we do here and to help educate other states so that they can improve. And we always learn, too, from folks coming in. So that'll be a good opportunity.
Madam Chair, can I ask something?
Yes.
I really would like to invite all of you, I think, as commissioners to the meeting and be part of it. It's going to be half day Wednesday, all day Thursday, and half day Friday. Dave Roberts accepted to pay the way for Jim Unwick and Frank Schroeder to come as speakers to the meeting. And Thursday night, we're planning to have a get-together with everybody attending. I contacted also Region 5, 6, and 8, or Region 7, and they're interested in doing the same, covering their own states for the meeting.
Thank you, Fatosha.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to tell you about staff updates. We've had lots of activity. We did hire Amy Burrish as a rehabilitation counselor in the Lincoln District, and we're excited to have her on board. I don't know the dates. It's all been a blur. I can't tell you dates of when people started or whatever, but it's all been since November. Lincoln District Transition Counselor Shirley Peterson has been hired and is in training. The Orientation Center typing and computer instructor Sandy Raines resigned, and we have hired Peg Halverson in her place. She's in training. We've hired Amy Connery as the Rehabilitation Counselor in North Platte to fill the position that Denise vacated. She's in training. The center is very full right now. Also, we hired Elaine Kavulak as the Orientation Counselor in the Omaha District, who is also in center training. And then Jan Brandt, the Program Specialist in the North Platte District, has switched her primary office to being in Kearney. We really were stretching at the seams for the North Platte office, and with adding the transition counselor there wasn't any place for Jan to sit, and Jan does live in Kearney, so made more sense to have the transition person in North Platte and Jan in Kearney. Jan still will cover the entire North Platte district, which is hard to do anyway, much less from one end or the other, but she's working that out, and she and the supervisor have assured me that there wouldn't be any neglect of the further west or northwest parts because of her officing out of Kearney. And then also Barbara already mentioned Ryan Ossentoski as the Newsline coordinator. Those are all I know. I hope I'm not forgetting anybody. Okay. I'd like to talk about the comprehensive position questionnaire process and the letter to Mike McCrory, if it's okay with
Sure. Brackett.
And Carlos can add anything if he wants to. We did go back after the last meeting and ask for Jan Ludwig to fill out one of those and for Dave Robinson to fill one out. We also checked with all the supervisors and asked them to think about whether any of their support staff should be reclassified and fill out the position. Actually, most of the support staff positions were upgraded, oh, I don't know, 3 years or so ago, I think. And so the decision by supervisors was that those were all adequate, and, but we did need to get, Dottie Wilmot and Jan Ludwig and Dave Robinson to do the questionnaires. It is a very lengthy, it's called Comprehensive Position Questionnaire, and it's not kidding, it's a very lengthy thing. Dave has been extremely busy with getting the things caught up in his part of paying the bills and entering all the payroll data and doing all the HR.